What?
Or maybe Willow.
Oh, Willow. Oh, Mark.
Oh, Dina.
I got that.
Yeah, I bet you did. Oh, my God.
Hi, and welcome to Gen Extemporaneous. This is a podcast where I come up with an idea, I do some research, I grab a bottle of wine, I bring everything to Mark, and he pontificates. Today's episode will begin a multi-episode arc exploring a subject that everyone seems to be talking about. The Investigation Discovery miniseries called The Curious Case of Natalia Grace, which aired from May 29th to the 31st, 2023, and is currently streaming on Max and Discovery Plus. There is not going to be any kind of overarching important theme that we will be employing here. This is simply going to be Mark and I discussing each episode and speculating wildly about what the hell was going on here. When I tell you that without a doubt, the roasting will be real, trust. So, if you are Michael Barnett, you probably won't want to listen to this, but the rest of you fuckle up, because this is going to be wild. Hi, Mark Snedeker.
Hello, Christina LaRusso. So wait, this is a documentary? I thought this was the worst Game of Thrones sequel ever. Yes. Wild. I would say so.
Yeah, so hot take.
All right. The episode one freaked me the fuck out, because you're basically talking about bringing a child, possibly, into your home that is kind of like a little murderer. They think this person is, they're running a scam. They're hovering over their bed like Chucky, right?
I know, like literally, like yeah. Chucky-sized kid.
She's poisoning her mom's drink with Lysol?
Well, he said pledge,
It was not pledge. That guy has not dusted a lot of furniture, let me tell you.
No, it wasn't pledge.
It was definitely not pledge.
No, it was like Mr. Clean or something.
Something. Well, whatever it was, it would have tasted very obviously not like lemonade or sweet tea or whatever people like that drink. Crazy. Just really crazy.
And then my hot take is similar to yours, which is
shocking.
This is a shocking story. And I believe nothing that this fucking guy is saying.
He's not, let's just say he's not the most reliable narrator.
No,
right?
And do you know how there are some people that make the hair on the back of your neck go up?
Right.
Upon meeting them.
Right.
Like bad vibes.
Like for me, Voldemort. Yeah. Right?
Right.
I mean, yeah. I just never trusted that guy.
No. Well, I mean, good instinct.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm pretty sharp.
but honestly, no, he's somebody that if I would meet him in socially or at work or whatever, I would be instantly put off by him. He is at once passive and aggressive.
I think they call that passive aggressive.
But I mean it in, I don't mean that he's doing passive aggressive things.
Right.
I mean, he is passive. He's like a simp.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, he's this weird, aggressive weirdo.
Yeah.
And it's very unsettling. His vibe is definitely off. Yeah.
It's not a charming. You know what there isn't?
Riz.
That's exactly what there
isn't. I knew you were going to say.
That's exactly right, Christina. Good call on your part.
I knew what
There's
you were
There's definitely
thinking.
No Riz. It was a Riz-free zone.
That's right.
We don't hear really from anybody else.
No.
Other than a couple of side characters, right?
Yeah. Okay, so let's lay out how episode one goes. All right, so what we are seeing in episode one is essentially two main narrators with some ancillary side people. And we will get to the side people later. We're going to start out with the two main characters. We first meet Michael Barnett, who was the father of the family who adopted Natalia Grace. The footage that you're seeing in episode one is from an interview that was done in 2019. And this becomes important because as the series goes on, you see another interview that's been done with him, another set of interviews.
Is he equally creepy in that one?
Yes.
Good.
So in
I like consistency.
And it gets even weirder. All right. So in 2019, he was interviewed, by these documentarians or these filmmakers. And he's wearing a suit and a tie, and he's very composed and very rehearsed and very, this is his passive simp
yeah.
side where he's just like,
we're victimized by this scam. Yeah,
absolute
you know.
Victim mode. Absolute
we accidentally adopted a 40-year-old.
Right. Okay. You know. And so he is telling this story in 2019 of what has happened, what has transpired, how it came about that they adopted this child, potentially or older.
Whatever. We shall see, I guess.
We don't know.
Theoretically.
But, and where his family was and what the makeup of the family was. So in 2010, they are a wealthy family, as you pointed out.
As he says.
He takes great pains to highlight how much money they have.
Right. We had four cars.
One of them was a Lamborghini.
Apparently.
At hundreds of thousands of dollars in the bank. He had a McMansion, he calls it.
Right.
They were living in Westfield, Indiana. They had three children, one of whom is Jacob, who had Asperger's, but also is this brilliant
mathematician,
mathematical genius, some kind of
savant.
I mean, very, very, very smart young boy. He's married to Christine Barnett. She has written a book about this smart young man, how they've homeschooled him and
taking credit basically for his brilliance
or capitalizing.
Of course.
There is a YouTube channel because there's video of Jacob talking about it, and then that's going to be posted on the YouTube channel. Well, looks like he did TED Talks.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Jacob.
So I tried writing a book about Matthew. You know, I called it My Above Average Son. But apparently it just didn't have quite the spice that the publishers were looking for.
Hers was called Spark, Spark of Genius.
Of course, yeah.
Well, 60 Minutes actually interviewed Jacob, and you know, it's one of the he's one 60 of those
60 Minutes
kids.
Loved putting on people
unique.
On the spectrum. Oh, they loved putting people on the spectrum who could do cool tricks.
Yeah.
Like they had that guy, Kim, whatever his name was, who could like play any piece of music that he heard one time. So they love stuff like that, right? So of course they put him on and they make him perform his tricks, right? Which is a little demeaning, but also it's math, so it's fine. All right, so keep going.
Yeah, so Michael's bragging. We've got 14 couches. Why the fuck do you need 14 couches?
I don't know. Like, were they just all stacked up in one room?
I don't know. It just seems weird. All right, so we also meet...
The house it wasn't that big. It wasn't like Bill Gates' mansion.
No,
no,
he really was, I think... he lived in a nice neighborhood. It looked like he lived in a nice community.
Yeah.
And
like a $600,000 house.
I think he said a 5,000 square foot home.
Yeah. So that's a big house.
It is in Westfield, Indiana. All right. So we also meet Jacob Barnett, who is the smart boy who is now older, right? He's grown up. He's a young man. He currently lives in his father's basement.
Right.
Not surprising. Although I have to say he seemed like a thoughtful kid. But he's
also seemed very fragile.
He does seem fragile, and he seems very confused. And he says as much. He says, I'm confused. He says, I kind of want to know the motivations. I want to know the truth about what happened, but also...
Maybe I don't.
I maybe don't want to know the truth.
Because maybe I find out that everybody in my life is a scheming psychopath.
Well, and I mean, spoiler alert, there's a lot that comes out in future episodes where you kind of go, well, no wonder he's...
But he has 100% the stereotypical basement dwelling bedroom, right? Cinder block walls, random whiteboard that they said, hey, could you write some mathematical formulas on that? So that'll look good in the background.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a very like, if Will Hunting lived in a basement instead of a shacky downstairs duplex home.
Yeah. I like them apples.
Okay. So then Michael goes on to tell us after he gets done kind of bragging about his previous situation.
Well, he does mention he only has 13 cents now.
No, by 2014, at the end of all of this, he had 37 cents in the bank, no wife, no job, and no kids. And his life was completely uprooted.
Right.
And they ask him in this episode, you know, like, do you blame Natalia? Is this her fault? And he says something like, if we hadn't adopted Natalia Grace, my life would be totally different.
Right.
You know,
it's all her fault.
It's all her fault. Well, is it?
She didn't make you into a sketchy, weird guy. But I have to say, at the beginning there, when he's telling that story, I'm like, holy shit, what the fuck would you do if you adopt a kid who is like, you know, possibly some kind of scam, right? I mean, is there a give back agency?
Well, I mean, did you feel like he was credible right from the jump?
No,
like
I thought there was something wrong with him, but I also thought that maybe she was... you know, older than they said, because adoption's coming out of Eastern Europe a lot of times, or Russia's particularly. There are, you know, they do fudge the age, right? Because they want the kid to get adopted.
Well, and they say as much in the episode.
Yeah. And also, you know, records are, you know, sketchy.
Well, and they're in foreign languages. You don't know what the hell you're reading.
Right, exactly. So my initial take was, wow, they really got stuck with a tough one there. But I also was like, maybe they didn't do a lot of due diligence, because mm-hmm. this guy doesn't seem that sharp. No. You know?
Right. And we'll get there. We'll talk a little bit more about that. Okay. So now here's what we learn about the adoption. They were in such a great place.
Yes.
They suddenly decided that they wanted to adopt.
Right.
So, and we're going to get to motivation here in a little while, but like put a pin in that, right? Yeah. So they decide they want to adopt. They were originally going to adopt a Haitian child, but then a natural disaster happened and right. they shut down adoptions, which makes good sense, right? Because sure. at that point, you don't know.
You don't know if it's legit. You could be adopting someone out who's got parents.
Been kidnapped, right? Or
being trafficked.
Yeah. So that didn't work out. And then he claims, this is his claim. Now, we never hear anything to refute this claim. And that's one of the things I want to talk about that I have as a problem with this documentary. But all right, so he then says, out of the blue, they hear from Shepherd Care Adoption Agency in Hollywood, Florida.
Yeah, so a couple of red flags right away. Shepherd Care, religious nut jobs, possibly. Right?
Potentially.
Florida, since we live here, we know that's not good either.
No, some random and unbidden.
And to get an unsolicited, I get a lot of unsolicited emails every day.
But none of them to adopt someone.
Yes, not a single one of them has ever been to adopt a child from Eastern Europe. So, you know, if he told me I got this email out of the blue and there are hot singles in my area that want to meet me, I said, okay, you could get that email. That's a possible
That's
email. But that there are young children in Ukraine that want you to adopt them, well, a little less likely.
Well, and then to add to that, to add to the sort of dodgy nature of his claim here, he says that they called him, well, not necessarily the dodgy nature of his claim, but the dodgy nature, if
of
this is
thing.
Real, if this claim is real, something else that's like a huge red flag is they said, you'll have 24 hours to make this decision.
Closed adoption.
Otherwise, she's going into foster care.
Cash money doable. Yeah. This seems super legit.
Right. It's so immediately, yes, that's a yes for the Barnett.
Yeah, they're like, you know what? I think this is the path we were meant to take.
And so they go down to Florida. They all gather together. They go down to Florida. They have time to get white t-shirts and paint greetings. Welcome to the family, Natalia.
Which, by the way, would be terrifying for any new child. Like, what have I gotten myself into?
Well,
do we really make our own t-shirts? Is that what we do?
So what they find out is that this child is being returned to the agency by someone who has previously adopted her, but now is returning her. They don't know why she's being returned.
Is there a guarantee on these children?
And then, so he sort of says, you know, we were very outraged. How dare a family adopt and then return the child? So they go down and he says they show up in this place. Now here's where they show up and the adoption agency is in a strip mall.
Yeah.
Now he sounds shocked about this.
Right.
But we're from Florida.
I guarantee
we know
they were in a strip mall.
This is where down south I have found in my time living down south, frankly, some of the best restaurants are in strip malls.
Are in strip malls. There's
Christini's in Orlando.
Right in a goddamn strip mall.
Right
next to a H&R Block.
Probably one of the best dinners I've ever had in my life. And Mark really enjoyed his dinner.
Yeah,
there.
So I recommend the double veal chop. It's like $300, which I didn't know at the time.
No, it's $150, right?
Whatever, I don't know. It was a lot.
It was good, though. I mean, it was good. You enjoyed it.
Hell yeah, I did. It was apparently a meal for two that I ate all on my own.
That's right. So they seem shocked that it was a strip mall. I'm like,
I would still be sketched by that.
No, I'm joking, but they said that, and he goes, and I think it was on the wrong side of the track. I'm like, my dude, it's Hollywood, Florida.
Yeah, there's only that side of the track.
That's the side.
It's all that side of the track.
According to Michael, they saw her birth certificate, which said that she was born in 2003, which would have made her 6 years old at the time. But the document was in Ukraine. Do they speak Ukrainian?
They do. Okay, they speak Ukrainian and Russian.
Okay,
there.
So the document was in Ukrainian.
That's a bit of a contentious point at this point.
The document was in Ukrainian, and so that you know they can't read that. They don't know what it really says, but it shows 2003. Now, I watched a Dr. Phil episode because, of course, when all of this went down, Dr. Phil was on hand to do interviews.
Is there any way I can like exploit y'all in any way? Yeah,
exactly.
Thank you.
So Dr. Phil, and this is not a part of this documentary. I just watched it as a, because I'm just so like, what the fuck actually happened here?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's with Natalia. And she says in that interview that she came to the U.S. when she was six. So that means she would have come that year.
Yeah. Already got returned.
Others say that she came when she was five. The other sources say five, but she in that interview said six.
I can barely remember what age I was when I did anything when I was a child. I was always 10.
Yes, but she's presumably closer in temporally.
You could get that wrong.
Yeah, of course. So anyway, she supposedly would have come within the last year. Yeah. She is, as we find out, fluent in English. So they meet her at this adoption agency. She comes running into the room, no hesitation.
Yeah.
She's screaming, "Mommy, Daddy, Mommy, Daddy."
I feel like they were in the other room going, "Look, let me just be straight with you. If these guys don't like you, you know, it's straight to the glue factory for you." So they're like, "You better sell this."
Yes. And now she is a disabled person. She's struggling with she's a dwarf, and she has a very special kind of like a really rare kind of dwarfism.
Right. That has a lot of attendant medical issues.
So she spends a lot of time at the doctor's. So they knew that she was going to be a special needs child.
Right.
But this fits into their.
But they're like, we're rich.
We're rich.
We're
and
the
we
kind
also,
of people who should be taking care of special needs children.
Well, they have a little. I think you find this out in episode two, but. A little spoiler alert. They had a school or a after school situation or some kind of daycare, childcare for special needs kids.
Okay.
That they were running. That was part of what Christine was running.
Yeah. Well, luckily no scam artists ever run things like that.
No. Right. But think about that. So they've got the Center for Special Needs Kids.
Yeah.
That they're running, and now they adopt this special needs child. Michael claims that this was one of the top five greatest days of his life.
Seriously.
He is a very dramatic man. And the kids are also super excited. So they take this child. This is the first that they've met her. And they make the choice to, they're in Disney, they're in Florida.
Let's go to
Disney World.
Right.
That's going to be a nice treat and the family bonding moment. And like, hey, little girl, look at what life you've been brought into.
It's America.
Right, exactly. Here is the day, the very first day, disaster strikes. They get their first sign that something might be amiss here.
Yeah.
Christine, they're in the hotel at Disney World, and Christine goes to give her new 6-year-old child a bath.
Yes. And?
Screams in terror, according to Michael. I mean, this is a very dramatic moment for Michael.
Is. Very much is.
Michael says they discovered what?
She's got pubic hair.
She's got a full set of, I don't know what to say, like a full set of pubic hair, fully grown pubic
hair. And at that point, I was like, I guess that could happen, right? I was like, who would make that up, right? So I'm like, I can see how that would throw you off a little bit.
Right.
She's six-ish.
Yeah.
You know, how old is she really? Whatever.
What would you do in that situation? If you adopted what you thought was a child and they had pubic
hair. I would establish an alibi right away.
I would be like, what?
Yeah. So I would call a doctor.
You'd call a doctor and say, "What? Can we have this person examined?"
I would check my adoption agreement to see if she's still under warranty.
Obviously she was, because somebody else had just returned her.
Well, I don't know how many times you're allowed to return the same child. So,
well, it's different family.
And maybe she's not even under warranty anymore. Maybe you buy her as is.
As is. No lemon laws apply.
That's right. Exactly right. So, yeah. I mean, you reach out to some medical professionals.
Wouldn't you?
Yeah,
I would.
Yeah. I might give the adoptions agency a call. I, in fact, I might drive over there to catch them hastily packing up all their computers and desks,
yes,
probably.
Yes, exactly.
Like, I swear there was an adoption agency here. It's like, no, dude, it's a Halloween store. What are you talking about?
Oh, my God. So, no, I would. I think in that situation, I would be like, we need to get in touch with some kind of authority. Yeah,
and it's not impossible for very young children to age prematurely, right? There are particular syndromes that have children age much faster than normal. I don't know any that necessarily cause them to go through puberty when they're five.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, there's, I don't even remember what it's called, like gerontism or something like that, where they, you know, progeria?
I don't know.
I think that's what it's called, where they basically look like they're 85 years old.
Little old people, right? Yes.
So I could see that, you know, especially when you have someone who has multiple birth defects, you know, could you have some other ancillary stuff going on that could cause that? Or maybe medication that she's taken can cause hair growth, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Again, is that probably going to just actually explain it? I don't know. But that's where I would be looking.
Right. But I definitely, but to my point.
I might put baths on hold for a while.
That might have been awkward. And then if she is an adult, can you imagine? Because if you're an adult, you're running a scam.
Yeah.
Like.
Maybe shave.
What are you even thinking, right? Yeah. I definitely would have contacted an authority, though, because something's not right.
Right, or that's not normal.
Right, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily go to the police. I wouldn't jump down that rabbit hole, but I would want to establish, like, well, this seems strange. How old are you really? And ask her if she didn't know what she was talking. Then I'd contact a doctor. I definitely would. I would be like, please, somebody explain.
How long have we had this?
What is this?
Yeah.
So Michael says dramatically at this point, who the fuck is this person? So let's talk a little bit about Michael and Jacob this far in in the documentary. My take on Michael, as I said before, he immediately made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. Even in I didn't. Because everything sounded super rehearsed that he was saying. Nothing seemed really like their responses were not plausible because they discover pubic hair on what's supposed to be a 6-year-old and they go, well, let's just go on with our trip.
Whatever.
We're just going to, it's like, we also think who the fuck is this person, but and the whole thing about how did they adopt and that story.
It was all very rushed and secretive and expensive. That's not a good combination when you're choosing to adopt a child for the rest of their life.
Correct. And in no way, shape, or form do I believe the story about how they were contacted about this adoption.
Right. Unless they're on some adoption contact us board, like we're looking for, we're looking for a special needs child to adopt and there's some kind of community out there.
Yeah.
But that doesn't seem to have been the case.
Well,
but who knows?
Who knows? And maybe they had talked about it. I could not find, and I'm going to do some more research between now and their next episode and figure out whether or not they had an online presence. Would they have in 2010?
Sure.
If nothing else, well,
they had
Facebook,
an AOL.
They would have had
AOL. They just click one day. It's like you've got adoption.
But anyway, I know that they had some kind of a YouTube. So then that means I'm trying to think about how much they were trying to be early on influencers. Right. If they were trying to be that, obviously it would have looked different in that day and age. Quite a bit different in that day and age. It would have been a nascent sort of thing.
Yeah, it wasn't really an end in and of itself, but it was a way to possibly get on TV.
Right.
Right. So
something like that or to whatever. I just think that they went into this with an agenda. I think they found this adoption agency. These are all my guesses because you will never find out anything that is actual fact in this documentary. You are just hearing stories that from multiple people and there's no,
and they contradict each other.
And the filmmakers do nothing to help really clarify what in the hell is going on.
Good job.
So
they're not exactly Ken Burns is what you're saying.
Definitely not. As a result, I don't believe anything that Michael is saying. I really question what Michael is saying. I don't believe him. The documentarians are not helping us understand what's being said. Now, Jacob, I think, doesn't know what the truth is. Yeah. I don't think that Jacob is lying.
He seems guileless.
That Jacob has been told these things.
Right.
I don't think that Jacob is super conniving. I think that he's going along trying to help his dad. I don't know how realistic he is about consequences for what, you know, like, I don't know. He's protecting his parents.
But if your parents say, hey, you know, your sister may not be who she says she is, mm-hmm. and she's possibly a monster and she's trying to kill us all.
Right. And
then you go, oh, all right, Dad.
Could be.
I'm with you, bro. Whatever you want to do.
Right. So in that regard, I don't blame him, but I also don't believe him. I know that probably it feels to me like some of the stuff he's saying, he either is absolutely lying about, or he's saying what he's been told that are lies, and he believes them to be true. But
see, now I'm less FBI than you. So when I first, in the first part of this episode, I was basically thinking, yeah, this guy's kind of weird and strange, but I was thinking, yeah, maybe she definitely did have pubic hair and, you know, maybe she is some kind of fraud. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was with him for a while until the absence of a few things rang some bells near the end of the episode. But we can get there.
Yeah. For me, it was immediately no for him on him from a vibe.
Well, you're very suspicious. Now,
I am very suspicious, but I'm wondering how many people, well, I know that at a certain point, people definitely by the end, people are kind of going, what is this Michael dude? But I think, well, it's set up the way that it is in the first episode so that you are led to believe
you get sucked into his story.
This is a very bad situation that happened to this poor guy.
Yeah.
And he's, I think, initially meant to be sympathetic, but I immediately no sympathy for him at all. I just was like, keep him away from me. It was almost very hard for me to watch this. I had such a dislike of him. Yeah. So moving on. Now we meet ancillary characters who have been witnesses to this.
Yes.
The events. Mike's mom, Kathy. She's there really as a character witness for Mike.
Yeah.
She's there to pump up Mike, say what a good husband he was, how much he loved Christine. He was a great father.
Yeah.
He was super excited to meet Natalia. And oh, yeah. They told us about the pubic hair, but
whatever. These guys are very pubic hair positive.
They are. And they were very excited about the party and to meet Natalia. And it was a great party because not only do they go to Disney World, then when they get home to welcome her to the
big party.
Again, these people are positioning themselves at that time as being saviors, you know, and
hey, maybe ease the kid into your life a little bit. Right.
And wouldn't you have asked some questions like, you know, like, wouldn't your, one of your concerns have been like, did they speak English?
Yeah.
You know, that would have been a cool one. But see, I don't believe anything about how this adoption went down.
Right.
So anyway, okay. So then we also meet Kimberly Franklin, who is Mike's sister.
Yeah.
She's another one. They knew all about the pubic hair. Yep. And she said, that seemed strange.
Yeah, you think?
But they still embraced the child. They wanted her to be a part of the family. I think Kimberly says, it's amazing how much she actually even looks like us. Like, she's got the dark hair, and she looks like our family. She looks like she could be Michael's kid, right? Like, so it was a believable addition to the family. Right,
a nice illusion.
And these are all
for these self-centered fucks to entertain themselves
Exactly. And then we also meet Rachel Amber, who is the self-described nosy neighbor who lived a couple of doors down in her own McMansion.
Right. So she's Karen.
She's Karen, big Karen energy. And she said, you know, initially it was very exciting. The Barnetts finally got a girl. They had three boys. Now they've got a girl. Oh, how wonderful. And it seemed like, you know, and then also she said the kid hit the jackpot because they were wealthy. And, know, so you could see that she's sort of like, you know, she's just kind of walking around the neighborhood in her.
Let me tell you. Yeah.
In her dress.
In her house
she had
coat.
Like some kind of a maxi dress on with a white sweater over. But it seems to me, I feel like, and I'm probably misremembering this, but it seems to me it was like in patriotic colors. The sweater I know was white, but I thought the dress was like red, white, and blue.
Totally,
but it's
could be
a print. It's some kind of a print.
Yeah.
And you know, she's walking around and you see her kind of pointing to the Barnett house. They don't live there anymore, but where they used to live.
She's loving the attention.
Oh, she loves the attention. And I am telling you, as soon as I saw her, I said to myself, this could be a member of the Wilverse.
Oh,
a Will White fan.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised in the least.
Absolutely was.
If she was.
She just had that feel
lurking there in the Love Army somewhere. She just gives me those vibes. All right. So now the story starts to get really weird and really intense. If this wasn't weird enough, now the story kicks into overdrive. And it kind of gives you an idea that the rest of these episodes are going to be crazy.
Yeah. Well, it's already pretty crazy.
It's already crazy, but crazier than crazy could be.
Super crazy.
And seriously fucked up. All right. So I'm just going to say two words here, Mark, and I want to let you know what I'm talking about. So the pubic hair is one thing.
That is a thing.
But then now that they're home, they discover, again, Christina's always the one that's discovering these things.
Yeah.
She's, and then now I guess another bone curdling scream from Christine. Yeah. It turns out period underwear.
Yes, that's so great. I was really happy to see that they introduced that into the episode while I was trying to eat dinner.
Oh, do normal bodily functions put you off?
I guarantee you, if I was at your dinner table and started talking about pee-pee and poopies, you would be upset.
I'm very upset that you even said those words right now.
See?
I am an extremely modest person. Yeah,
you're very anti-scatological.
Yes, I really am. And it's a real struggle for me. So, and it gets there in this episode.
So sympathize with me then.
Yes. All right.
Yeah. So, okay. That's, you know, that's another step, right?
Well, what happens?
Well, I mean, first of all, they discover that she's been throwing her underwear away. Right? And didn't she steal somebody's underwear or something?
No, she just was hiding underwear and they were finding it.
Yeah,
finding the underwear
in mysterious places.
Right.
I mean, it's not exactly the telltale heart, right? Well, to bury this underwear around the house.
The sister clarified what she was using were socks in her underwear and I think throwing them out the window. And that's what led her to that. And then there were period underwear hidden around the room.
Yeah. You would think that they would notice that on laundry day. It's like, you don't have any dirty underwear? Really? All
right. So, but luckily, they're videotaping the interaction because then Christine says to Natalia, she asks her to tell Michael what happened. And so then Natalia says, well, I have a period. And
so that's why I believed that, you know, this whole age thing was going on.
And then, I have been hiding it.
Yeah.
And I mean, she's on tape saying it.
Yeah. Now,
why are you fucking taping this encounter, first of all, Christine, which is weird.
That is weird. And I mean, I guess you can get a kid to say almost anything if you tell, like maybe she was peeing her pants or something, right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe she just went through puberty at a freakishly young age. I don't know. Right?
We never do. No one has checked. No one, they didn't immediately take her to the doctor.
Right, which is really what they should have done. And, you know, if it were true and it was a concern to you, at least you have, you know, a medical professional to A, witness it, and B, tell you what's going on.
Right.
But no. They're just going to videotape a young child and grill them about it.
Moreover, she was seeing doctors because she had a situation going on with her foot that required surgery.
Yeah, they have the particular syndrome she has, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. Obviously, you know, very short limbs, but they have fairly normal sized hands and feet, but they often turn.
Yeah,
right.
There's
they turn
some
outward.
Kind of
dysplasia,
and she has. Scoliosis as well.
Yeah, that's part of the whole thing, right? So, and they show some grainy footage of her coming out of foot surgery.
Where was this? Were these home movies made in the 1970s?
I know.
In 2010.
Did you shoot that on a potato?
Right.
By
2010, people had
you're rich. Get a decent, or even a digital camcorder or something.
I guess, but you know,
step up your game a little bit.
I guess. She was seeing doctors.
Yeah.
So at that point, doesn't a doctor go?
I assume that they see that area at some point in their exam.
Maybe. I guess she was having her foot worked on, necessarily
casually mention it to them.
The doctor, right? You're there at the doctor. Say something about this to the doctor.
If you see something, say something.
Right.
That's right.
So.
A little pubic terrorist.
So you talked about, and here comes some more supportive
narrative.
Yeah, supportive narrative from outsiders, from witnesses. So her, as you mentioned, her kind of dwarfism is extraordinarily rare.
Yes.
There are minimal, under 1,000, at any given time in the world. And lo and behold, it just so happens that doctor knows another child with that same rare condition.
Yeah.
Here in Indiana.
Yeah.
So
great.
So this person, they set up a play date for Natalia and this other little girl. They realize that she's much bigger than the other girl.
Yeah.
We see pictures of it. And she is.
Yeah.
She's considerably bigger
than
the other girl who was supposedly right around her same age, six years old. So they said when they were meeting with this little girl, it appeared that Natalia recognized that she was being perceived as older than this other little girl. So Michael describes how Natalia puffed out her cheeks and changed the shape of her head.
Look, she might be the genius. That's a master of disguise. Or maybe she's like the faceless men in Westeros or in Braavos.
Yeah.
So she can just change. Now they show a picture of her kind of pouting a little bit. And yes, her cheeks look fuller that way.
It's an angle thing.
But there's zero chance a six-year-old is going to say, oh, you know what I need to do? Fill out my face a little bit more.
But an adult pretending to be a six-year-old might, right? So that's where you go, oh, well, that's kind of.
That's why I was still on board at this point. Yeah. I'm like, well. Looks like they got a 20-year-old or whatever.
And that I was to a certain extent. Like, I knew something.
Because you can distrust Michael, which any normal human would, and still think, okay, maybe parts of this story are pretty valid, like the main points. Right.
Like maybe that is what happened. But also I knew that whatever was going on here was dodgy as hell. We get an interview with the mother and the daughter
who came over for the play date.
They both said she was older. We were terrified.
Yeah.
They both said it seemed that she was older. And in fact, the girl who's now 19 at the time of the interview or 16 at the time that the interview was taking place, she said, it freaks me out to think that I was set up on a play date with an adult.
Yeah.
So the other kind of clue for me that was like red flaggy that I knew, where is the scam here? And maybe there is a scam here. Michael claimed they found a woman who could speak Ukrainian.
Yes.
And who came into like a church function and spoke Ukrainian to Natalia and Natalia couldn't speak back.
Yeah.
That's weird to me.
Yeah, that she should have. I mean,
she would have been at least five when she left. Yeah. At five.
At four. You speak your native language. Not well,
but I can't imagine at five, between five and six, that you would forget.
Yeah.
You know, she was in the United States less than a year, probably.
Allegedly.
And could speak fluent English.
Yeah. And not a lick of Ukrainian.
No accent.
Yeah.
No
That's too quick of a turnaround.
It is. So.
At the very least, she was in the United States longer than they said.
At the very least, had to have been.
Yeah.
Had to have been. And then now here, if she was a child, right? Jacob's asking, the family's asking her about Ukraine and saying, what's it like?
What was it like?
She couldn't remember.
Awful.
No, she said it was summer all the time.
Oh, yeah.
But she couldn't remember anything about Ukraine. Well, that's fishy. So something is fishy about her origin.
Sure. You have some memories from a year or two ago, right?
Right. Okay. So then Michael pointed out that she seemed antagonistic towards the children.
Which I didn't get too worked up about that. I mean, that's a difficult situation. Mm-hmm. And they did it in the craziest, most dramatic and high stress way possible.
Right.
Hey, how's it going? Great. look, we have shirts just for you. We're going to Disney. Oh, you got pubic hair. That's crazy.
I know.
Holy shit.
But she's antagonistic. In particular, he said to the younger one, and here's where it gets kind of uncomfortable for me to talk about, but it's gross. So evidently, she would strive to get next to the youngest son in the car, and then she would pee on him
and
poop on him.
Yeah.
And then they cut to a clip of Natalia where, again, they're interrogating her on video and making her admit to what she's done. And she says that, yes, she did go and sit next to the youngest boy, and that they said, well, what happened? And she said, I farted.
Yeah.
And when he asked you not to do that anymore, did you do it? No, I kept farting on him. First of all, I've never understood how people can control that to use it as a weapon.
Yeah.
In that way.
Some people can. So anyway, she kept farting. Well, maybe she just had to fart and felt no reason to hold it back.
This seems to me like a sibling kind of thing to do, honestly.
Now, with my...
You know, pooping on someone, look, no, that's extreme. But like...
Anytime you're in an automobile with your siblings, it should be treated as a battleground, right? That's how it was for me and my siblings. Mm-hmm. I ruled the back seat with an iron fist. You don't get to touch my seat belt, which we, of course, never used. You don't get to come over the line.
Right. Oh, the line.
Leah had very strong feelings about people looking at her in a certain way.
She still does, though. I mean, it gets wild at the beach.
So, yeah, it does. So I understand that the back seat is a combat zone. You have to just accept that. That's how large families work.
Right. That didn't strike me as odd. But one of the other things now, I don't know, how do you feel about this? She would take the boys' toys and then drop them in the road where they could see it when cars were coming. And Michael then extrapolates. She was doing this because she wanted the children to be hit by a car or killed.
So, yeah. So that was strange. And I wasn't sure I believed that part. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's possible,
I believe that she took their cars.
Yeah. That. I mean, that's normal
Or their
stuff,
toys or whatever.
Right? Yeah. But to bait them into walking into traffic, I don't know if I believe that part.
And
that's a very sophisticated plan.
Well, see, here's the thing. To me, and Michael is the one, like I said, extrapolates from that plan. Yeah. So if it's true, which it would seem plausible to me, that to torment these boys, she would take a toy of theirs and then put it in the road.
Yeah.
To me, that would be a kid putting it in the road to destroy the toy and not thinking that through.
I'm going to get your car run
over. Your car is going to get run over.
By an actual
car.
Or
your whatever it is, your doll or whatever. But it does not seem to me logical that she would have that devious, you know, that a 6 or a 7 year old would be thinking, well, and I'm going to get them killed. It's just, I want your toy to break.
And I think we've talked about this previously, that I have a checkered past when it comes to my siblings and their physical safety. Mm-hmm. Right. I tried to bite Tom on the soft spot when I was about 1.5 or 2. I had been two. It must have been 2. There were stabbings, accidental, but stabbings nonetheless. Mm-hmm. But that's a leap to say, I'm going to bait you into walking into the street so you get hit by a car.
Yeah.
Why not just hit him with the car?
Yeah. Right.
Like hit him over and over with his toy. That'd do some damage. Right. Yeah. So, yeah, that one.
It's Michael's
strained credulity.
Yeah, no, Michael is the one who then interprets it for us. Yeah. So, again, here we are. We've got this narrator who is interpreting this story. He's telling you things happened, and then he's saying, okay, what that thing happening means is this, which is very skewed in Michael's and the family's favor at this point. What the truth of this story rests on whether or not you believe him.
Yeah, well, he doesn't have... He doesn't give off a good vibe, so it's tough to believe him.
But
at this point, I still think she's something. I don't know what it is.
You mentioned the stabbings in your home.
Yes.
She was supposedly hoarding knives under her bed. Mike claims that she told them that she wanted to kill them in her sleep.
Yeah.
In their sleep.
As a practical matter, that's not the way to accomplish that. Don't just stand there at the bed. go do your work.
Yeah, I know, right.
You know, and don't tell them about
it. She's not very good at it.
No, really not.
She is like that villain at the end of a movie.
Yeah, she's monologuing.
She's wanting to talk about it. And then, you know, you can zip in and
say, well, Mr. Bond, what I have done is rigged an impossibly complicated machine to end you in 9 minutes. I got to go. I can't stick around and watch it much as I would like to. So that is a very creepy image, though, because, of course,
it is a very
small
image.
Children
doing dastardly things
is very creepy.
It is very creepy.
Right.
They decide now that they're going to take her to a psychologist because this doesn't seem quite right.
And as soon as that happened, what Michael says he does is he put her in her room and then slept in the hall outside of the door.
That's a different one. The first one is her standing in her room and he says
just
to her,
found
the knives. What are you doing? And then she says, I'm waiting to come and kill you.
Yeah.
And then,
why don't you just go to sleep?
Yeah. And then the other one is where he wakes up and she's standing in the room with a knife.
Yeah.
And then he puts her in the bed and then dramatically says, and then I stayed the entire, of course.
I slept in the hallway,
whole night outside
guarded
of
my
a room.
Family.
Give me a
who
break.
Who have all abandoned me by this point, apparently. God.
So they decide to take her to these psychologists. The third or the fourth one. And this gave me pause too. Told them she was a sociopath.
Yeah.
This is, again, Michael telling you this story.
Yeah.
The psychologist stated she knows what she's doing. She's in control of it. Michael was thinking going into it, this is probably schizophrenia or something.
Yeah, we'll just
else.
Medicate her. It'll be fine. Nobody will murder us.
But what struck me was she saw 3 to 4 therapists before
shopping.
This person.
Yeah.
Came to this conclusion.
Yeah.
What do
out,
the others say would be my question.
Right.
And why did you quit them? Did you quit them? Did they quit you? Right. How did that work?
Because it turns out the person that they got the final opinion of was actually a life coach.
It's the narcissist hunter coming back.
They're like, you know what? Your daughter is a narcissist. And
I know this because my mom was a narcissist.
Exactly right.
I have no real formal training anything like that.
But honestly, it's narcissism.
It's narcissism. Ultimately, they're just getting really freaked out by what's going on.
Right.
Rightfully so. If this is really...
If it were true, you definitely should be freaked.
If this is true, if this story is true, these people have been through a horrific situation.
Right.
He says the weird thing about going to therapy, though, he says something about plausible deniability, and it doesn't really fit in the sentence that he uses. And it made me think to myself, that's the truth. They were doing all of this going to therapists and all the rest to establish plausible deniability for what they're about to do.
Right.
The kind of the final straw here for them was an incident in the kitchen where Natalia decides she seems to want to kind of come back into the family fold.
Right.
This was after multiple threats of murder.
It was a trick.
And she says, "Oh, let me help you with the dishes." And that's when she tries to poison.
Why don't you just take a drink of this tea that I haven't put detergent in at all?
Yeah. And so then Christine drinks and realizes
and let me
it's
just
got
tell
poison
you, again, 6-year-olds. Devising a poisoning plan? I don't know.
I mean,
seems unlikely.
She does have a full bush, though.
She does. So poison is a woman's weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they take you guys off that one day in gym class.
Yes.
Is that where they're like, all right, yeah, da da da, feminine hygiene, but here's how you poison people.
Here's how you.
Here are
as
some
a
of them,
woman. This is the expert.
Right.
That's a segment in Home Ec.
Oh, is it? Okay, mm-hmm. good. When the guys are like off, you know, drilling holes and stuff.
Yeah, you guys
whatever.
All had shop, and we had Home Ec, and that's
learning
where we
how
learned
to poison,
all that.
Poison people. That's great.
So she tries to poison supposedly Christine, and again, more screaming from Christine as she's
her adopted daughter
attempting to poison her. Now, this has traumatized Jacob to the point where he feels that he is never able to share a beverage with anyone.
And look, if you believe that was that truly happened,
yes,
and you happen to be on the spectrum and, you know, maybe have some other issues going on, that's pretty rational. I mean, that's pretty normal to expect.
Yeah.
Right? To develop that phobia.
I think I'm even if you didn't that. Have all of those things,
yeah, and someone, maybe be a little cautious.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it would be freaky.
Keep a lid on your cups. Yeah.
The clips that they show of Natalia seem to be designed for creepiness. It's like there's one where she's reading the Bible.
Yeah, and why are you
these
doing
can
that?
Be there can be ambiguous, right. Really, what these videos are showing you, because you can really read them in multiple ways. And so she's sitting there reading the Bible, and Christina's filming her saying, "Why are you reading the Bible?" Because I have bad thoughts, and I'm trying to get, you know. So
do you know what this documentary could have really used? Hmm. A narrator. Someone who knew what the fuck was going on.
I know.
Who was not Michael, right?
Right, or just...
I think, honestly, they're the real villains of this piece.
Well, let's talk about some conclusions about episode one, because this is kind of where it ends. And you get, like, previews for what's coming next.
Yeah.
And it gets really weird, and you see a lot of shit going on in these previews. It's like it would be impossible if you've got this far to turn it off at this point and not watch that next episode.
It gets, and pardon the phrase, hairy.
Here are our conclusions. Let's talk about them about this episode.
Here's the problem I had. Okay. At the end, I was like, where's Christine? Where's Natalia? She's not dead. I Googled it. Mm-hmm. She's not dead. All we hear from are Michael, mm-hmm. Mrs. Edna, whatever, you know, the Karen in the neighborhood.
Rachel.
Yeah. And the only real interviewees that I didn't have a big credibility problem with were the ones that did the play date.
Yeah.
Right. I don't see any reason for them to have lied about that. I can't wrap my head around how that would have been engineered. But at this point, I have to say, I still kind of thought, well, there's something going on, mm-hmm. right? There was something strange going on, and maybe he just handled it poorly. Mm-hmm. But the things that are missing are a narrator, some kind of objective voice, anything from Christine to see if their stories are consistent at least.
Yeah.
I'm certain they couldn't find the adoption agency. Not that, and I'm sure they have secrecy things or whatever, mm-hmm. but I'm sure that place is gone and is now an air conditioning repair store.
I bet it is. I bet it is.
So, so I was really just kind of struck by the lack of voices other than Michael's, mm-hmm. really.
I thought it's odd all the way around. I don't know what to believe. I have suspicions about how things could go from either position, right? And I'll voice those as we continue
and
on.
And by the way, if I have a child in my house that has threatened me twice with stabbings and has attempted a poisoning and that I believe is setting traps to have my children run over by a cement truck, yes. I might put a padlock on that door.
Right. Okay.
No unsupervised activities at all. Right.
So one of the things that you said that resonated, though, is that there's a lack of a real structure, a narrative structure that helps you to know what's going on. And they are doing that 100%. On purpose.
Yeah.
They are setting you up to confuse the hell out of you, and you are going to have to sit with that confusion because nothing ever is really made clear, or you don't know what's true. You, as you said, only know Michael's point of it. So imagine this from both sides. If you are in that position and what you are suspecting is true, that this is a much older person in your house, that they're a threat to you, what would you do?
Call the cops.
Call the cops, right? You would have to. You would have to call the cops.
Now, they claimed to have called the cops and were told, oh, there's nothing we can do, which I don't believe that even a little bit. I mean, if you have a legitimate threat on your life from someone in your home, family member or not, and you have supporting witnesses, presumably Christine is on board with this, right? Mm-hmm. They're taking the kid.
There's got to be an authority that you can turn to. And that's what I would do. I would call an authority and I would say, I think I'm in danger here.
Yeah. You're in danger, girl. You're definitely in danger,
I'm in danger, girl. All right. So that's what I would do I thought it was an adult.
Right.
Now, what if it actually is a child?
Right. You still...
What would you do at this stage in the documentary? Yeah. You've had all these weird things happen. What would you do if it was a child?
Baker Act them, or whatever the equivalent is in Indiana for underage children, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you don't just go, well, I'll just sleep out in the hallway. All right. Well, you're going to do that for the rest of your life. And do you think that's going to keep you from getting stabbed?
No. It just, to me, it would be so terrifying.
Yeah. It didn't happen in my house because I would beat them.
But I,
if they showed any signs of aggression.
God, your eyes look really terrifying right there.
I'm a scary guy.
I don't know. I just feel like if that's all true right now, and then the opposite could be true. She could have been this little girl that they are maybe not being completely truthful about what she did, like the claims, like she's right. Who, you know, the knife thing and all of that.
I think it's perfectly legitimate to assume that at least her origins is a murky story and may not be accurate.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
we'll see.
We'll see. No. But definitely strange responses that they had. But again, that's like, you know, that's, I don't know if that's fair of me to say, because that's like when you see people who are grieving and they laugh or they cry, but they don't cry the way that you would cry. There's there's always someone who wants to say, well, that's not how someone grieves. Well, no, that's not how you would grieve, but it could be how those people grieve.
When I threatened to kill my brother with my Cub Scout knife, when he was very young,
so
I have to say, nobody reported me to my parents. But again, that's because I was a tyrant.
Well, and John really wanted to live.
He did. And he
offered to take a ration cut.
Yeah, he was like, I will eat less. I'm like, well, I don't know if I can make that fly, but I'll see what I can do. I'll take it to the executive committee.
Honestly, the way you describe your food in your childhood.
Oh, it's not like we are constantly.
It did, that you were like really on the edge of food insecurity and, ooh, it sounds bad.
And honestly, it really wasn't like that. Now, when it came to snack treats, it was definitely it was definitely Lord of the Flies at that point.
Snack treats?
Snack treats. Like, you know, you're getting like a Twinkie or a cookie or whatever.
Snack treats.
Yeah. But
for me, it's either a snack or a treat, and those are kind of synonymous.
Oh, no. I want mine to be both.
Oh,
because snacks could be something gross like carrot sticks or something. I want snack treats.
Right. See, to me, snacks are just like junk food.
Look, we are being bombarded by strange cartoon characters to eat a hunk of cheese and eggs.
That's true.
So, you know,
a good hard-boiled egg, though.
By the way, price of eggs?
Gone down.
Yeah, so where are we with this thing?
So that's it. This is episode one. And now we have to wait until next week to talk about episode two.
I guess I better watch episode two.
This documentary, because I've seen the whole thing. You're still going through
it. I'm doing it. I can't partition it in my head and only talk about one episode if I've seen four episodes, because they all run together for me. So I'm watching it as we're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, all right. Coming up, we'll do next one. Next week will be episode two. And if you guys want to join in on the conversation, you can come find us on Facebook. We have a Facebook group, or better is actually follow us on Twitter if you're on Twitter. Find us on Twitter at extemporaneous2. I am Christina Gen X on Twitter, and Mark is at Mark Eats Peach. All right, I guess that's all I have.
Peace out, Cub Scouts.
Bye.